woke up this morning with the sun down, shining. Well, welcome up, Pigs, Action Jacks. I'm Tim Howie. He's Mr. Dave Scatino over there pressing various buttons. S&P futures down 350. The S&P futures down 27. Do we have Mr. Lou?
I am here. How are you?
Hey, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Oh, just peachy.
Do you think they've got enough stuff for you to talk about after this week, or what?
Some weeks are more lush than others with topics, I guess.
I guess that's why it's the era of talk radio and all-day talk TV. There's certainly enough stuff to talk about.
I don't know why all this stuff gets thrown on Thursday, except maybe that Kevin and the rest of you know that I'll blab about anything. So
well, it's we do seem to have to be flexible. Our governor Lou, as you're aging with me, actually everybody's aging with me. It's not like I'm not bringing anybody with me, but it's stunning how you can just tell by people's antics. If you hear certain people talking about the COVID or whatever it is, you can just tell who's going to talk next because they feel out of the loop if their face is in front of a microphone doing something. Now, I knew with the CEOs and the president that somehow or another our governor had to get into it. Now, yesterday he was talking about all the different things he could do for COVID. If you people are intent on being sick with this disease, the nerve of you people. So now today he's going to say that something in all public buildings, kids over the age of 2 have to wear a mask. Over the age of 2, what are we doing?
This is pure theater, and quite frankly, I'm not the skinniest guy in the world, but if Pritzker wants to send the appropriate COVID preventative measure message, he ought to drop about 300 pounds. He looks terrible.
He does.
He really does. And I mean, and I'm sorry, but our public health, you got me on my soapbox now. Our public health people have no credibility, as far as I'm concerned, about this disease until they start talking about the impact of morbid obesity and what it's doing to people's survival rates and that there needs to be a massive nationwide weight loss program. And you know, the fact that they're not putting that message out, which is clearly tied to horrific COVID results, just tells me that they're not serious about this, that this is a political exercise and that these folks are not really serious about dealing with the disease. They're interested in dealing with the politics of the disease.
Well, I could just see
the meeting in D.C. where somebody comes in, some young, naive public health official comes in and says, "We got to tell people to start losing weight, and now." And
good luck with that.
Everybody looks at them and goes, "We're not putting that message out. Well, you know, that'll turn off people. We'll be accused of fat shaming or whatever." But yeah, I every time I see Pritzker talking, the first thing I, on COVID, the first thing I say is, "Buddy, push away from the table." And just get yourself start setting an example for the people that you're leading rather than simply issuing
nothing. The camera adds 20 pounds.
Yeah, how many cameras are they using?
That's a lot. Anyway, I shouldn't laugh, but I mean, I admit to being need to drop a few myself. I actually have, but Lou, I can't get over to people that are 20 years old and they're like 70 pounds overweight.
We've been talking about overweight, people in the country as a health crisis for a couple of decades. And overweight adds a tremendous, load to your body, making it more susceptible to all kinds of things. COVID just happens to be, pretty well targeted on that issue. And why that message has not been promoted? Well, we know why the message hasn't been promoted. It makes people uncomfortable.
Well, we also have
why that message has not been promoted by the public health establishment. We will come out and tell people you need to wear masks. Masks that we know, at least in the way we're using them, are totally ineffective.
Right. Where were you?
I mean, there's a reason. If you're flying in Europe right now, for example, if you're flying on Air France or Lufthansa or a couple of the other major airlines in Europe, you can't get on the airplane unless you've got an N90, a fitted N95 mask. And that's the rule.
Somebody
over there is waking up to the fact that cloth masks are unacceptable and unworkable as a prophylaxis against the disease. But we're not doing that. Why not? Because it's more important that we be able to tell people to put something on their faces and demonstrate to the rest of you that you're the rest of the population that you're part of the team, you're part of the tribe that's making the effort to avoid contamination.
Well, Lou, before we get, we have some serious things to talk about. Not that this isn't, it is, but I don't get the part that we is this some kind of a test from either for the big companies and the dumb politicians to see how much crap people will essentially absorb. I mean, how far you can push the big lie. I mean, the idea that you can't go to school or you can't be outside, and yet Harvard University, will they do anything for money? Are they the biggest hooker there is? I mean, there's a lot of competition for that. The fact that they did a study and said that the air in the airplane is like better than it is outside or some conclusion, am I supposed to believe that? I mean, come on. I mean, I spent 4 years with Boeing engineers at Pullman, and they would tell me about how the new planes have less outside air brought in than the old ones because they save fuel with that. Am I really supposed to believe that sitting next to somebody on a plane is safer than walking down the block by myself? I mean, I can't be that stupid.
Again, this is, and I've said this before here, the biggest failure in this entire debacle is the failure of our public health system and our public health authorities to put together a coherent message that is aligned with the facts as we know them consistently.
And the facts could change over time and will.
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. I mean, we all get that. I understand implementing the lockdowns and the mask requirements initially because we did not understand what was happening with the disease, and we needed to take a shotgun approach to preventative measures to try to find something that was going to slow this down so we weren't overwhelming our hospitals. I get that. But by the end of May last year, we knew, first of all, that the lockdowns and the masking requirements were not really that effective. And the second thing we knew was that the lockdowns in particular were causing more damage than the virus was in terms of the people that were being, the measurement is life hours lost, in terms of the people who were dying from the vaccine, the lockdown versus the people who were dying from COVID. And at that point, again, there was, and then we had, so we knew that, but nobody wanted to stand up and say, with the exception of a few, nobody wanted to stand up and say, hey, we need to stop the lockdowns because they're actually killing more people. We're losing more life hours than we are from the disease. And yet at the same time, we have the public health establishment telling us, you gotta have the lockdowns, we gotta avoid these gatherings. And at the same time, issuing the letters signed by, over 1,000 of these senior people saying, oh, it's okay to go out and demonstrate because social justice is more important than the actual status of the virus and the spread of the virus. I mean, the minute that letter came out a year and, what was it, 3 months ago, I said to myself, this is ridiculous. These people have just forfeited any credibility or right to give us guidance on what to do with our lives in response to the disease.
Well, Lou, I was
soapbox now.
Talk about we'll dash over to some other stuff, but talk about one thing affecting another. We have Alan Trotch in the studio with us today. He's listening. He manages money with me at one of the firms that I do some business with. Good guy, and he'll be on hopefully talking a little bit when And Dan Zan, because Dan does some work for us as well. Anyway,
have you treated Alan to the munificence of the Stocks and Jocks World Headquarters Breakfast Buffet?
Alan spotted the Dunkin' Donuts and said, "I'll get all of you guys coffee." And then he says, "By the way, they're not open early." And I said, "Alan, they haven't opened early since the COVID. Why do you think we're coffeeless in the morning, for God's sake?" Anyway, when I started in this business, Lou, there were only a couple of computers, and when you went down to the floor, there were none. So if I was looking for spreads and for volatility diversion, shall we say, you had to like write the stuff down and do it in your head. And when you looked at something, you'd say, okay, and you'd try and put a stack contingency on an option order over everybody's head, I know, but just follow me for a second. And I would say, all right, the first thing you'd ask yourself, all right, if the stack went to 500, would the spread be good or bad? Well, obviously, if the answer is good, you didn't have to put a stack contingency on it, because if it went up or down, you didn't have to worry about it. Nobody's going to fill it. But some orders, you didn't want the stack to move, so you had to put stack contingencies on those orders. Okay. Anyway, so you got in the habit of whenever something happened, you would say, if some idiot drove by you at 100 miles an hour, immediately your training would be, what if everybody did that? How screwed up would we be? So you learn to jump to the extreme. Because if one person goes through a red light, you say it's no harm, no foul. But if they all do, it's a big crack up in the middle, right? So I look at this, and every time these people make some of these dumb decisions, or we go out on a limb of being able to tell people what to do, I immediately imagine, okay, what if we took this to the nth degree? What if when we sent people home, okay, and locked them down, what we really did is protect a certain class of people. I mean, you didn't protect the Hispanic community with 8 people in a house, right?
We didn't protect the people who were working at clerks or drivers,
no,
or delivery people,
garbage
or any of the myriad of labor intensive jobs that sit out there that are performed not by the people like you and me sitting in offices, but by guys who actually get their hands dirty.
Well, you protected. I don't know, who are the two guys,
that were... Somebody said at Costco one day, that toilet paper is not loading itself into the store.
No. I mean, so that one of the dudes who was, there's two guys, there were two Jewish guys, not that it matters, were fighting over that one stock for like a year. One guy was long it and the other guy was short it, and they'd come on NBC and they'd all fight over whether the thing was up or down. I forget the name of the
Mr. Ackman and Mr.
Ackman was one of them, yeah. And who's the other guy? Older guy. Anyway, Ackman comes on and talks about how there should be this total lockdown. Well, of course, the dude's probably got an 8,000 square foot apartment in New York, lives by himself. I'm sure he still wanted his mail, his sandwich delivered, his Walmart. Is there no concept of who those are? Like real people. They're out there like working. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. You get to stay home, but other people, I mean, if all of a sudden the mail didn't show up, the Amazon didn't show up, and the sandwich didn't show up, he'd be outraged. Well, who do you think those people are?
It's like this goes directly to the point of one of the topics that you guys assigned me for reading this week.
Yep.
The piece in Tablet, which I put out on one of my Facebook feeds, that piece on Tablet about the triumph of the Bayah, the Muslim concept of natural transition in societies. But one of the things that jumps out of that article is that you are seeing literally a political war declared by one party against, and they were very specific in the article, and I understand why, against the white middle class of the United States. And the idea that we are going to demonize and damage this traditional bulwark of the Democratic Party is now the enemy.
Yeah,
is now on the receiving end of some of the most significant negative effects of the legislation that's being passed, the inflation that's occurring, and the tax burden that's being imposed on the country.
Well, why do you think there was a I don't know if
and that's these people, and I tried to explain to one of my friends on Facebook that who said this is ridiculous. You know, it's the Republicans who are the bad guys, blah, 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 blah. And I said, you know, if you want another Trump, keep thinking that way.
You're going to get worse than a Trump. You're going to get a Law and Order Mussolini, for God's sake.
It could very easily happen.
Well, I have a question for you, though.
I mean,
I have a question for you. Ken Langone, the dude from Home Depot, and I don't really, you know, he's one of these guys that ended up being an early investor in Home Depot and blah, blah, blah. And, I think he's a, you know, I think he's a very bright guy. But you can somehow tell sometimes when he talks that his skill set, although I wish I had it, obviously, the guy's a bazillionaire, and he ran a company very capably for a long time. So no, I'm jealous of his skill set, but you can sort of tell that he's kind of a newbie when it comes to economic numbers. And he said something this week was pretty interesting. He said, he wrote something, and he's essentially telling the administration that it's going to have other policies that are going to actually be, you know, boomerang, have almost like a boomerang effect on the people that they are trying to help. And,
I disagree. I go back to that Asabia article. The people that are trying to help are the elites.
Well, that's my point. When it happens, regardless who the administration is, if it happens like, you know, 30 times in my lifetime that some program doesn't actually help the people it's judged, you know, it was lobbed out there to help, I'm thinking these people aren't that stupid, Lou, that it's actually intended to not help the people. They're talking about it helping, it's intended to help the people that somehow have the power in this country, and it's neither, and I really wonder why every time.
Think back to the Floyd riots of last summer.
Yeah.
You know, this whole defund the police move. Do you think that helped the populations in those neighborhoods?
Oh God, no.
Where you know the alleged police violence was occurring? You live in a place that has a police violence issue, and the idea that you were going to, you know, paralyze the police, handcuff the cops from doing their job, whether it's the Ferguson effect or it's the George Floyd reaction, I don't care. Do you think that those policies actually help the people in those neighborhoods?
Well, no. Well, some people.
No.
Some people.
No.
Whoa. Some people in those neighborhoods that help. People run the neighborhoods. Now, I'm worried about the police.
The criminal element.
Sure.
Yes.
Absolutely. So I'm saying there's always a winner.
And so those neighborhoods suffer. Do you think that the shopkeepers whose businesses were torched, whose windows were broken, who are contributing directly to the economic growth of those neighborhoods, do you think that they were benefited by those initiatives?
Oh, absolutely not.
No, they're the target. And again, that's part of that, and I screwed the word up. It's Asabia is the term that I meant to say. And of course I mangled it because it's early. But that's the point of that Asabia article, is that they are the policies are directly targeting the white middle class voter who, as the author noted, in many cases aren't white.
They're
coming from all kinds of places, but they're all in that economic class, and they are all the target of these policies and regulations and statutes that are being jammed through in response to whatever perceived failure or outrage can be manufactured by the elites in the mainstream press.
One thing
in the political circles.
But the thing that our contributors to the show have taught me, even though this is my educational background, the economics of this, guys like Carl have taught me, I got to look longer. I used to look short term, but now I look longer. And I go back like 40 years on some of these numbers. And for all the people that are fighting from the right and the left and arguing with your significant other and your friends and your family and don't talk to them anymore because of politics, please talk to them and start looking at the numbers, for God's sake. Because if you look at the numbers, Lou, you can't tell when one person enters the office and somebody leaves. The relentless push towards pushing this money to only a certain few is dramatic. And it doesn't matter who's, the people might change a little bit, but the idea that the movers and shakers in Chicago are Democratic, they don't give a crap whether they're Democratic or Republican. They just want to be on the dole. You don't think that the big firms, all of a sudden, Goldman Sachs has decided to, to give money to Biden. They don't care about Biden. They don't care about Trump. Biden looked like he was going to win. You got to support the winner. This is street sense, Lou. And most people don't have it, for God's sake. mean, look, we just talked about the police problems in Chicago. Here, I'll tell you what the numbers are. And if somebody shoots somebody and they shouldn't, you know that I am one of the biggest critics of how the Chicago Police Department could be one hell of a lot better. And I would try and make it better if I had the job. This year, year to date, shot and killed 515 people. Total shot, 2,977. Okay? Police involved shootings, 14. 14, Lou. I mean, what do we got? 5 killed, 9 wounded. I think some of those might, I don't know if they're all other people. It might include the police that got killed, but I'm not sure about that. But 14,
and
right? 2,600?
I would guess almost all of those police involved shootings involved somebody with a, you know, being attacked or an officer being confronted with somebody with a gun or another deadly weapon.
Oh, absolutely. There would be a gun involved. And, but, you know, the gun, well, the one where the kid was trying to throw it away and the officer reacted. I mean, if he had it to do all over again, would he do it differently? Yeah. But it wasn't like there wasn't a gun that he saw flash. I mean, that's not the point. I'm saying that every single time we get more and more, bold. I mean, the Resolution Trust, everybody forgot that. If you go back and read that, you'll be stunned at how much wealth they took from some people and gave it to other people. That just happened to be the Bush administration people. Duh, because he was in power. All right? And then, well, now we've got this money supply, the money they're pouring out at people right now. Do you think that's even, Lou? If it was even, I wouldn't care. If every single person in the country, they say, bring me your Washingtons, the $1 bill, and we'll give you a Jefferson, a $2 bill, and every dollar you've got. Nobody'd care. I wouldn't care, but that's not what's happening. We're talking about inflation on top of somebody in 20 years. The median income in this country has gone from 30,000 to 37. So it's up, what, 25%? And what do you think the CPI will tell you? We're up 55%. And anybody who's got a brain cell working will tell you most things of any consequence have gone up in price like two and a half to three times. Housing, cars, education, hospitalization, the big items on the agenda. So the idea that this isn't targeted, Lou, and it's all the Republicans and all the Democrats, is to me is so ignorant I can't even go there. But extreme.
I just note again, I'm going back to what the author said in terms of, you know, how this particular party has demonized a particular set of the population. The purpose, I believe, is of course comparable to what you said, which is this is all about wealth transfer, and we just happen to have identified, you know, we've got the segment of the population we can demonize that will justify our policies to transfer, you know, to transfer more money to our favored groups. Living in Chicago, you know, taught me basically that, at least in most big city politics, we've effectively got one party rule. The parties are basically, you know, us and you. And those are the two political parties.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
There's us, you're in with the tribe, or there's you, you're not in with the tribe.
There was a song like that. What, I'm in with the in crowd or something? Wasn't there a song like that?
Oh, God.
Back in your day.
We didn't want to go there with that song.
Yeah.
Don't. For God's sake, don't put that in the intro.
I go where the in crowd goes or something like that.
Yeah, I'm in with the in crowd. Yeah, that's right. But don't.
But Lou, what you're forgetting is, in the Trump administration, you have, and of course, Trump didn't cause this. We had people that went overseas for 20 to 30 years and didn't pay taxes here, yet bought up a whole bunch of companies here with the money that they saved by not paying taxes. And I think at any given time, you and I, and we'll bring Alan and Dave with us, and maybe a couple of accountants because they know more about it than we do, we could have gone into those places, done an audit, and looked at the crooked transfer pricing and just the insane assumptions that the IRS was letting go by with probably congressional influence. And we would have put just about all of those people in jail for reneging on their taxes. And I don't give a crap if somebody said, well, it's technically this little thing the IRS wrote, it's technically within this one. Fact is, they didn't pay any taxes when everybody else was. Okay, so now Trump essentially, his group said, well, we'll let these guys bring it back for like a small amount. And oh, by the way, we'll lower the rate to 21%. What do you suppose, all that did was codify the stealing. Okay, so that was his group's, shall we say, bonus to the in crowd. And now these guys are given their bonus. Every single group does the same thing, and the same people end up with the dough, Lou. I mean, it has nothing to do with who's in office. It's just how they go about it differently.
Well, and I mean, this is the essence of why you make political contributions, right?
Well, they shouldn't be that bold. I mean, I'm not saying that if you gain access and you have a chance to present your case, that at least you'll get your story through to a congressman or a senator. And if you have the right case, at least you had a chance to talk to him. You might have a chance to do something for yourself. I think that's good government. But just paying the guy off to do something stupid, that's not the same thing. I don't think. I mean, I'm just...
No, but again, this goes back to this whole idea, and I have harped on this before, too. The reason we'll see more and more of this and learn about more and more of it is because the government's expansion into almost every aspect of our economy has been relentless over about the last 50 years. Well, the more influence you give government and regulatory agencies by virtue of statutes and bad court cases, the more opportunity there is for rent-seeking. The more opportunity there is for large donors to come in and say, because the government's there already now, so now the people who are affected by it are going to come in and try to make government assist them economically.
Well, we got to go to break by direct
funding, right, or by fixing the rules.
Right, we got to go to break, but sometimes it's easier to make people serfs than it is to keep them serfs, and we're serfed. Now the question is, are we willing to stay there? I think a lot of people aren't. And
that was Trump.
Yeah.
You know? That was why you ended up with Trump. We'll talk to sports when you guys get
SP back. Futures down 2.25, NASDAQ futures down. Are you going to be the first commissioner of the College Professional Football League, Lou? We'll be right back. We're right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P futures down 2. We go up every day, but we're down 2 at the moment. NASDAQ futures down 19. Individual stocks in the Dow. It's been slow. There's really nothing moving in any of the Dow stocks. Nothing moving really in the transportation stocks. It looks like a slow morning so far. Dow futures are up 35. Let's see what individual stocks would be causing that. Oh, I'm sorry. We got CRM. We got Salesforce that had earnings last night. I tried to do a spread in there and looked like I could get it for 60 cents. Then David snuck up to 90 and I said, I'm not paying 90. So I didn't do it. But Salesforce is up $7. Trading 268. They had earnings last night. Europe, DAX down 95.6%. FTSE down 23.3%. These guys have been up for several days in a row. CAC ran down 20.3%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei, and this is two really quiet days after several days where these guys are 1.5-2%. Yesterday they were like flat. Today up 17. Call that flat. Shanghai down 38. That's over 1%. Hang Seng down 278. 1%. And these guys bounce back. And they're coming right back down. South Korea hiked interest rates. Wow. David, somebody hiked interest rates?
Crazy, isn't it?
It's got to be a misprint. It's got to be a misprint, I'm thinking. U.S., yesterday, the Dow Jones was up 39. Like I said, quiet. S&P up 10. NASDAQ up 22. Just keeps creeping up in that record area. Bonds, 10-year 1.35. So, again, that's pretty far up from the 1.256 we were last week. I mean, it doesn't seem like much, but it's, you know... It's creeping. Now, the Bund, minus 0.41. Again, like 2 weeks ago, it was minus 0.50, really. Japan, however, is stuck at this positive 0.01. They're not moving at all with the other guys. They're not moving at all. Oil down 54 cents, 67.82. Brent down 50 cents, 71.75. Natural gas up 3 cents, 3.92. RBOB unchanged at 2.29, but RBOB's up a dime, really, in the last week. And we've got gold up 70 cents at 17.91. It seems... really kind of locked here between the 1785 and maybe 1805. We'll see if it breaks out of that range one way or the other. Silver down 5 cents, 23.72. Copper down a penny, 4.25. Crypto, Bitcoin is down 1907 to 46,939. And we had one of the Fed people, Esther George. Now, here's my read of the Fed real quick. It came out last week and a couple guys were not dovish. They're saying, well, you know, we got to start the taper sooner or later. We're down 2-3 days in a row. They poured $85 billion into the program and essentially bought the market back up, maybe not specifically in the market. So we rallied for a few days, and now Esther George comes out and says that she would taper sooner rather than later. So to say that we're a manipulated market by the Fed, and if they're not trading on it, somebody there is, just saying. David, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. It's 6:38 in Chicago. Weather currently here is 73 degrees and sunny. We'll have a high in Chicago, 83 humid with possible storms. For our Phoenix listeners, start off the day, it's 85 and clear. It's going to be a beautiful 112 and sunny today. Traffic, we got Smash Up Derby this morning.
It's a dry heat.
It's a dry heat, yeah. There's a vehicle fire, which is now extinguished, on the Kennedy East before Irving Park Road. Two right lanes are blocked. There's also an accident at Toohey Avenue at I-294. Des Plaines River Road. There's another accident at Kennedy West at US 12. Also on the Eisenhower, I-290 West before US 20 Lake Street. Heavy traffic on I-55 North at the Ryan exit. In sports, Cubs split a doubleheader. First game, the Cubs beat the Rockies 5-2 and 7. The second game, Cubs lose 13-10 in 10 innings. Sox dropped one last night to the Blue Jays 3-1, and they'll play their day game today. Diamondbacks beat the Pirates 5-2, and in PGA, the FedEx Cup playoffs continue with the top 70 players in Maryland and playing the BMW Championship. Back to you, Tom.
We had no shootings on the Express? Must be because of the rain.
Yeah, must have been.
You know, when you You look at the Hey Jackass, and all of a sudden we
get it. There are just as many shootings. They're just not hitting anybody because of poor visibility.
It could be. But no, when you go to the Hey Jackass thing where you get all this info, and it's interesting, Lou, there'll be like a huge storm on maybe a Saturday afternoon, so nobody gets shot from 3 to 6. They'll label that as a rain delay.
That's horrible.
I love it.
It's horrible.
Before we switch topics, let me just recommend to the listenership a Glenn Greenwald article on Substack. It's called the Bizarre Refusal to Apply Cost-Benefit Analysis to COVID Debates, which goes to the heart of what you're talking about. But his particular discussion is in regard to the impact of masking on young children versus the actual damage done by the virus. It's worth a read, and it's an interesting discussion that sort of captures a lot of what we were talking about with respect to why the debate and the policy hit seems to fall disproportionately on middle and lower middle class folks. Anyway, let's talk about the leprechaun.
Well, when you lock people into their houses, you should have some awareness of what the inside of the house looks like. If you're there by yourself, I guess it's an escape from the germs. If there's 10 people there and 5 of them are working, it's not exactly an escape, Lou. This is not high math.
No, it's not rational either. But that's where we are. I mentioned this before. This is very similar to the craziness we saw in the aftermath of 9/11. Which resulted in the creation of the TSA and a massive imposition on travelers and everybody coming in and out of airports that to my knowledge hasn't prevented a single thing, but in any event, we could shift off of that topic.
So what do you think of yesterday? I quoted. Paraphrased. How's that for the term? Rick Tellender's book was at the 100-Yard Lie from years ago, and he talked about how the solution to this whole mess in college football probably would be regular colleges that have just regular kids go out and play football and play against each other almost like a club team. Then on top of that, if you really wanted it, essentially a semi-professional sponsored teams by these universities that have nothing to do with classes. Said if you maybe play a year, you get a year tuition free. If you want to use it, doesn't have to be the same year. Why not just say that the Michigan football team or Alabama is an Alabama State sponsored professional team and just let it go? I mean, and because this whole idea of keeping them together. Now, this Supreme Court, I keep saying that everything on this show is the same topic. Do you think that the Supreme Court, when they popped this thing out there, this ruling for college, things about selling your likeness and so forth, and
name, image, likeness, Supreme Court decision that found against the NCAA for restricting the compensation on name, image, and likeness for players. There was no rational basis for what the NCAA was doing. Yes.
Okay, so do you think the Supreme Court knows? I'm sure they're brilliant people in their own room, but get them outside the room. I don't know how smart they are, but do you think they know that they just cleared the way for boosters to pay players whenever they damn well pleased?
Sure.
Do you think
that was specifically mentioned, I think, in the NCAA's brief. So it was in front of them, and their response is, look, we don't care. I do think that the Supreme Court and virtually everybody else is using the wrong model in terms of assessing how, these players are treated. The model is not employer-employee. And that notwithstanding the fact that has dominated the discussions and certainly has dominated the arguments for the players and their agents and lawyers, the actual relationship is in loco parentis. It's parent-child. The coaches and the clubs have authority over these players that no employer would ever have over its employees on a day-to-day basis.
But Lou, how do you, comment for a second on, let's say you're in his, by the way, you know, I think highly of you. We've been friends forever, and I would really like your firm to be successful. You know, my Michael's Cheatham and Howe is a new firm, right? I'll be, you know, we all we have to do is find a guy named Cheatham, and we'd have it legit, right?
We're in, yeah.
But you don't normally get a whole lot of outside people, even though they might like your firm and like the people that work there, that are dying to pay people to work at your place just to make themselves bask in the reflected glory and foolishly think that their appendage grows an inch every time you guys win a case.
Oh, no, but that's exactly college football. You know, that's exactly what you've got in college sports.
Yeah, now there are people that are willing to throw $100,000 at some quarterback to go to state or wherever the hell they're going for some ridiculous reason, because they can bask in the reflected glory, or whether they can bring customers to the sky. I mean, I don't know what it is, Lou, but I learned at Notre Dame two things about college sports. It was really neat to be able to go to a major college super game every Saturday, but I also knew the professor on Monday didn't give me an extra day for my homework if they won or lost, and it didn't make any difference to my life, except for maybe I got to go to a bowl game, which was pretty cool. But I learned both sides of it. It did, nothing grew an inch that I wanted to grow an inch.
This is the essence of the tribalism that we referred to earlier, Chief. I want to be a member of the tribe, and my tribe, you know, we're members of many tribes, but one of the important tribes we're members of, because it involved a time in our lives when you know, we were becoming adults, and there was a lot of emotional baggage associated with that, positive and negative. But it's important to be a member of that tribe. And if you went to Notre Dame, or you went to, you know, Texas or Michigan or whatever, the most important experiences for you on that campus, the ones that you will likely recall, are in these tribal events. You know, in the basketball arena, on the football field, in the stadium. These are outward and easily, you know, manifested examples of your tribal membership. And that's important to people, and that's, you know, and it doesn't just go to the donors. It goes to the big donors. It goes to every single alumni who gets a call, you know, 20 years later from the fundraising. And the people making that phone call know that if they've got a successful football team, or if they've got a successful basketball team, it's a lot easier to get money out of people, because that reinforces their membership in a successful tribe.
You know what, Lou? Everybody says that, and everybody argues with me. And maybe you're right.
But I'm not arguing with you.
I think
you're exactly right. I'm just saying this extends universally through our culture.
But I just had a quick comment on what you just said. Of course, I never let anything pass, which is a major fault. But I went to two schools with totally different views of this. One is the University of Notre Dame, and one is the University of Chicago. University of Chicago basically bleep canned football when they were the champions of the Big Ten. I don't think University of Chicago has had any problem raising money since they bleep canned football. I'll bet they've been at least as successful as Notre Dame.
But most schools maintaining the level of academic performance that the University of Chicago has over, you know, the last, you know, five decades is actually more difficult than you know, maintaining the kind of athletic prowess. And the short answer is people are donating to the University of Chicago because of its tribal affiliations in academia. And that's
okay.
You know, the average guy going to the University of Chicago is probably not as willing to pull out money for the university as somebody who went to an athletic powerhouse who they can point to and say, you know, this is a huge part of your collegiate experience.
I would guess
that let me give you an example of which I'm aware. So Harvard, Harvard, you know, has plenty of money and a huge endowment and really doesn't need to go out to people for fundraising, but it does. When
Lou, they're relentless. They are relentless.
Well, they are. But when Tommy Anneker, I think it was, from Duke, took over that basketball program and got them to the NCAAs, they saw an inrush of money being donated to the school. Not because of its academics got any better, but because they had a basketball team in the NCAAs. That's a pretty clear trigger. I'm not saying University of Chicago has trouble raising money. What I'm saying is, if they had a football team that won the Big Ten championship one year, they'd raise a lot more.
I'm gonna use this term early in the morning, Luke. I'm gonna say there's almost like I'm agreeing with you, by the way, which you shouldn't do on radio, but there's almost like a bifurcated number. I mean, I was talking yesterday about the University of Texas joining the SEC, and I always thought the University of Texas made more money on football than anybody, you know, so I don't know how they were going to uptick that at the SEC, but we'll talk about that for a second.
Well, that's why the SEC welcomed them.
Yeah.
Not because of their football record. They haven't played good football since, what, the early aughts?
But what I'm saying, dude, the split between the University of Chicago and Notre Dame, and I mean, I'm pretty familiar with both since I went there, but there's no doubt, Lou, that you are 100% correct, and I am wrong on one level. The level is, there's all kinds of people that want to go back for one game to see their friends, that kind of stuff, and are willing to give, you know, $1,000 a year to Notre Dame to get in a ticket lottery with a pretty fair chance of getting the game you want. Okay, so there's no doubt that on that level, that the football, basketball not so much, because anybody get a ticket for that, but in that level, it's a huge moneymaker for them. Okay, and it probably covers the other sports and all the other BS they give you. But then when you start talking about the $30 million somebody's going to give you for a cancer research lab or something that might go to the University of Chicago or Notre Dame, I don't think that has anything to do with football. Honestly, don't. I mean, I think there's several levels of this. And I think on the one level that you and I see, and I know my buddies come in every year for a football game. Now, hopefully we would still get together if there wasn't football. But it is, like you say, it's a tribal event. We come in, we watch the game, we realize whether they win or lose doesn't make any difference to our life, really. But it's an event. And we talk about the bowl game we went to where they got their ass kicked. And I still remember that day worse than the winners, Lou, when they played Johnny Rogers in Nebraska. And I had a horrible seat in the end zone. And all I saw was Johnny Rogers' number coming at me and going away. How good was that guy in college, for God's sake? Anyway, and then he went to Canada and got on drugs or something, never heard from him again. But he was a singular talent, I thought. But at least he was against us. Anyway, but I think there's two levels, is what I'm saying. Oh, yeah, but I think there's two levels. I think there's the level you're talking about, you know, the $30 million guy that gets the skybox at OSU. I happen to know one of those guys. The people that are in there, the people that have the best seats and want to hang with the best guy. Hell, the new skyboxes at Notre Dame, you look at the inside of that skybox area, it's nicer than Caesar's Palace. I mean, they know where the money's coming from. They treat these guys like royalty. Now, does that get you some money? Probably. But I don't think it's going to, if you and I were going to endow a professorship, I'd much rather endow it at the University of Chicago, that long after you and I are gone, that professorship wins a Nobel Prize. If there is a heaven, I'd much rather be looking down on that than a football game, wouldn't you?
Yes, but that's because you and I are academics and have, you know, a focus on that. There are lots of guys, and they're not necessarily in the $30 million club, but they're in the $100,000 club whose circle of friends and business acquaintances is much more impressed by the fact that they gave, you know, $100,000 to the football team, or that they've hired, you know, some football player to do a make work job in exchange for, you know, money that they could put under the table. I mean, this it was hilarious that this Supreme Court decision came out that is basically going to allow boosters to pay college athletes whatever they want to pay them under these marketing rights. This came out at the same time that Hunter Biden became an artist and decided he was going to sell his paintings for $500,000 a pop.
Lou, if I, is there
you know, a... We're talking about money transfer and wealth transfer. I mean, that's basically what's going on.
Luke, could there be enough?
It's called a name, image, or likeness payment,
oh,
or a payment for a painting done by, you know, an idiot. It doesn't really matter. It's the same impact, and the benefits to the donor are tribal membership.
Well, I try not to be a total idiot. I know that my friend sitting here with me, Alan from NFO, Nigerian Family Office, is he's a serious guy. He goes out and markets to manage money people, okay? And people like to have him and the rest of us that are part of that group manage money for him. I know that if I could pop Alan into halftime up there in that Notre Dame group, he's got a group of people. I mean, the amount of money in the room is tremendous. I mean, I get that. I mean, I'm not totally obtuse. I'm just saying that, you know, it is a way for those people to mingle and to trade ideas and develop the network. I mean, I get all that. I don't know. Does every school do that? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Is all that going on down in Illinois and Indiana? I mean, I guess it is.
I'll tell you how pervasive it is. It goes on at even small schools like Northern Illinois. It goes on at the service academies, Chief. And that's how pervasive this stuff is.
But how different is it, Lou, than you guys doing a big golf outing for you know, Duke law graduates or something? You're still mingling with the same people. Does the fact that it gives you an excuse that there's a basketball game just make it easier or what?
Well, it's certainly more concentrated, and you're connecting with more people in one of those suites. I've been to I don't know, you know, a dozen games like that, and yeah, they're networking opportunities. The thing that I hated about being up there was that people were were much more interested in networking than they were in watching the actual game, which was a problem for me because I wasn't interested in networking. I was interested in watching the doggone game.
Well, that's why you're talking to me and not on TV.
That's exactly right. And so the, you know, there is a real opportunity for the, you know, the fundraisers to get in there, to talk to people, to you know, sort of make more of a connection with respect to these kinds of donors. One of the things I would note, by the way, and again, this I think this goes to the point that you and I were both making, that recognition from donating to the athletic fund is fundamentally different, because the guy who donates $30 million for the cancer center, you know what he does to make sure he gets credit for it? He puts his name on it, or he puts his wife's name on it, or he puts his kid's name on it. That's not what happens with unless, except for maybe the stadium donations. That's not what happens with the athletic, most of the athletic boosters. They just dump the money in, and then they can say, yeah, I donated to the football team. That's, you know, or I've got this kid in my employ. That's enough.
Well,
they get that recognition.
If you're up there in the room,
of whether their name's on it.
Well, if you're up there in the room, they know you contributed an X number amount. I got a question for you. We're running out of time here. We didn't get a chance to talk about half the stuff we wanted to, but that's okay. You and I, we always do this. If you have a law
case,
a couple of those
topics are timeless. Since I don't think we're going to be out of Afghanistan by Tuesday, on Thursday we could talk about that article by the four-star general.
Are you in the habit of if you have a law case or a person or a client in like North Dakota? Do you pull out the Dukey Law School and find somebody up there from Duke and just use it as a way of network? A lot of guys do that for Notre Dame.
I'm less likely to do that for law school for lawyers. I go with people that I know who know somebody up there who can make the personal recommendation. But if I'm going in cold and I find a Duke, you know, a Duke grad who's in that area, then I generally will you know, sort of drift to that. I will say that I do look for service academy graduates, because I feel I have a much better picture of what they're like in terms of, you know, mindset and work ethic and thoroughness and all that. And that's from not just the school association, but from the military association.
So you look for people like you?
Well, I think most of us do, but I look for people who are actually smarter than me and more, you know, more diligent.
I'm a little unsettled now. I kind of thought you were unique.
No, I'm dime a dozen.
Real quick, we got like 30 seconds. What's going to happen to Oklahoma State, Iowa State, those people? They're the part that goes over the fence last, my grandmother used to say?
Yes, they're going to have to figure out some kind of regional alignment, or they're going to have to get really good in football.
What happens to Air Force?
And that's the story.
What happens to Air Force?
Oh, the service academies are screwed by this thing. I mentioned this before. You know, the cadets are not allowed to earn money outside of their cadet stipend. So this whole name, image, likeness thing is I don't think is viable for service academies, and that further undercuts their recruiting ability.
What about the Irish, the SN, if they don't join a conference?
No, because they've got enough of a fan base that they can, you know, I think they can support themselves as they go along and enough is a success.
What if the big guys say you can't pay somebody outside the conference?
Oh, then they're going to be in trouble. But, you know, as long as they bring that huge fan base with them, they'll be able to dictate the terms of you know, whether people say we're going to play you or not. Again, that was the story with Texas.
Yeah.
Texas didn't come in because they were a great football program right now. They came in because they've got a fan base that's huge.
All right, Lou, take care of yourself, buddy. Talk at you next week. You're right. The big topics, I have a feeling, will not be solved by next week, so we'll get on them. SP Futures down 1, NASDAQ Futures down 21. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. Do we have Mr. Dan Janitas?
Yes.
Dan, how are you? Hey, we got your buddy Alan Chirach from NFO and with us this morning. He's in town. He was dying to come in, and I said, by the way, Thursday is the day that Dan is at. And he goes, well, I want to come in on Thursday. So here he is.
Hey, Dan.
Excellent. Hey, Alan.
We don't know if he knows how to talk on the air, but he'll learn. We'll figure it out. I told him, make sure you talk like into the microphone and not just up in the air, that kind of thing, you know, just the way that works. So how are you?
Great. Good.
We were actually talking about you yesterday. We had Monday night, we had a conference call with a bunch of clients, and they're coming in tomorrow with a little presentation, but we're talking about, you know, fixed income areas, and we're talking about cash, and we're talking about how aggressive you want to be in protected areas. I mean, really, there's really only kind of four investment strategies that I think of. You're either somehow cash. You're looking for some sort of a fixed income, which includes a lot of stuff that you do. You're looking for something where you're aggressive in the market and you don't care about protection, or you're in some area where you're there's some degree of protection. I mean, it really, I mean, that's about it, right? Well, of course, there's 100 variables in every one of those spots. And we were saying, well, cash is a problem. You don't make any money. The fixed income, even guys like Dan, and your name was being used, that have managed to constantly, you know, somehow pull a rose out of among the thorns. You've had to sell some of your roses because they got so high that, you know, that you're like, I just got to get out of these things because I made my money and that's it. But you're still finding other stuff, but it's becoming increasingly difficult. And the price of protection is high. So if you're in stocks and you actually want to protect, even this week with the two big rally days, we're still talking about an over 17 VIX. So they're not giving you any insurance. I mean, it's one thing to say I should have been in this 6 months ago. It's quite another to say, what do I want to get in tomorrow? It's a whole different conversation, wouldn't you say?
Right, absolutely. And on the bond side, we actually do have a couple of. I think we're kind of slowly turning the corner as I'm starting to see a number of companies issuing. Taking advantage because there is more talk now of a tapering coming, and the 10-year has trickled up just a little bit to 135. So I think there's this belief now that we're in a very quiet period. These 2 weeks before Labor Day tend to be the quietest, I think, of the year. But there is some activity going on, and I do know that companies are looking at this as an opportunity. You know, the low yields, this might be our last chance. So there's deals coming. One of them in particular is Southwestern Energy, which is a name that we've spoken about in the past. That we own, that we really like, double B rated, you know, higher quality, high yield. And the bonds, they're taking out some of their current debt, refinancing, and the new bonds that are coming, and they've actually upped the size of the deal to $1.2 billion, 5 3/8 due 2030, so a 9-year note, you know, you're picking up more than 400 basis points over treasuries, and it's a decent yield. It's a natural gas company, NGL and natural gas, U.S. based, predominantly in Appalachia. Well run, well managed company. And that's giving you some yield. So although the deal's coming next week, I think there's already a lot of interest. And we had talked about Genworth before. They have some 2-year notes. We've been able to buy them again at 5%. So there are, those are just two names, and I think there's going to be more. There's talks of some other companies that are going to be coming to market this fall. So that'll pick up the activity, and I think the level of interest is there already. That's going to help somewhat with the liquidity issue, and if at the same time the Fed tapers a little, that's going to be good, I think, in general for the economy. The latest I've heard, I don't know if you heard this morning, but the latest, Esther George, who's the, George, who is the, Kansas City, Kansas City chief, I was going to call her, the Kansas City, president, of the Kansas City Fed, and she's saying, she's out there wanting the tapering to happen sooner rather than later, and I think she's starting to get a lot of followers, myself included, and thinking that we just need to start this process. So with all that happening, that being said, I think that's going to be very positive for the fixed income markets and for the equity markets, because it's not going to be done in a fashion that it's not going to be pushed out there. It's going to be carefully monitored. So there's not this huge concern of runaway inflation. There's not this huge concern of much higher interest rates. But there is promise, if you will, or hope that we've got people paying attention now to the fact that we actually need to start tapering and need to start paying attention to the deficit and to the spending. So
you do have one guy you talk to every week, like me, who thinks we have been in runaway inflation for a while, and I think that $10 billion out of the $130 billion a month they're paying, they can call it taper. I call it a pimple on the ass of an elephant. I mean, just saying.
Yeah, I mean, when I talk about taper, I'm talking about increasing, you know, from where we are now. In fact, increasing, you know, somewhat significantly. And
well, did you hear Steve Leisman last week with his his judgment of what they're talking about? They're talking about dropping from 130 to 120 a month for 6 months, fixing the problem, and then going back to 130. I'm going to say my friend Dan will agree with me that that's not going to cut it.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely not going to cut it. And I think the latest word I've heard in the last few days is just, I don't know what we're going to hear out of Jackson Hole in terms of whether there's going to be, I really don't think it's going to be significant, but I do think there is going to be more, there's going to be more support for tapering, sort of when everyone comes back from vacation, if you will. I think people are going to look at this differently and start saying, like, ask the question that you just asked, which I think is good. Good one is, where do we go from here? To use an analogy, it's the same type of mindset that a lot of people who live in places where real estate has really exploded are saying, hey, you know, I could get, you know, whatever millions for my house right now, but the question is, where do we go? You know, where do we go next? So if you are somebody who is in the, you know, really does want to make a change, wants to downsize, you know, the kids are grown and you want to move to Florida or wherever you want to move, This is not a bad opportunity to do that, but for most people, I think the decision to move sideways is a tough one right now because it's the same thing that's happening in the, you know, in our markets as well. What I will say, though, that I have said in the past is, on the equity side, there are names that we like that had traded off a bit. You know, one of them that I've mentioned is MasTec. They are still a great company with great fundamentals, very well positioned to take advantage of some of the infrastructure when it comes to the maintenance and rebuilding of cell towers. That's a big part of their business. Just a really well-managed company, and their stock has traded up quite a bit here the last few days. I still think it has room to go. It had sold off from its highs of close to 120, and, you know, it got to the high 80s at one point. So if you look around, you can find those names, and I think those are the names that are going to have the most potential here. And again, some of the infrastructure stocks that we had spoken about before, the Aztecs, the SWMs, AIMC, some of these names that are going to benefit with the continued growth of the economy, but aren't going to necessarily have these super high valuations like we're seeing on the tech side.
Well, Dan, how do you? I'm not going to say you're not 29 anymore, but you remember the 1999, 2000, 2001 fiasco. And there were stocks in there, and as I remember it, because I wasn't. I bet you remember more of it than me because I was still in the OEX pit, and you know my life was those 100 stocks in the OEX basically. And we would laugh and talk about the other ones while we were in there. But I'm saying most of the OEX traders really didn't even understand what was going on in those. I mean, I don't know if anybody did, right? So, I mean, we're talking about a QQQ that was at the time 120 and ended up going down to what, 21 or some number. The ones you're talking about, the MasTec and those places, these are gems that you found and you say, okay, no matter what happens, these guys are going to continue to make some money. And unless, we decided to do nothing in roads or nothing anywhere. These guys are still going to be okay. And by the way, if we do get some kind of a collapse, they'll be back to their regular price in 2 years instead of 30 or 20, like some of them,
right.
Or never.
Right.
But I just wonder what recently, and I blame Alan for a lot of this. Mm-hmm. A lot of his clients have a lot of these stocks that I would never even think of looking at. You know, for any of my people. But I look at them now because we do options on them, and I'm the guy that tries to help out in the options area because that's what I do. But some of these things, to be honest, I'm not going to name any names because I don't want anybody to think that their stock is no good. God's sake, Dan, they're trading 400, and if it was 40, I wouldn't look at it. I mean, we're talking about, if interest rates were anywhere near normal, they don't have any revenue, they don't have any income, there's not a hint of a dividend. You know, if it was trading 50, I guess I'd get it, but like 350, 400, I mean, we've just elevated this stuff to some, I mean, if those things do have a collapse like 2000, and you and I keep trying to find better stocks for our people. I mean, you dig further in that than I do. I'm more of an index guy. But what kind of a U-turn do you think even the best stock is going to be liable to? I mean, I'm thinking that your 3Ms, they're 194. They might trade 150 in 2 years from now or still, or 5 years from now, or 194. I think you survive that pretty easily. I think 3M's a pretty good company, and they're making money, and we'll continue to. But it's not like they're not going to get a whisper of it. I mean, if all of a sudden this happens, because the margin,
right, there'll be some everything will trade down to a certain degree. If it's really depends on the market event. I mean,
right.
If it was an event that, you know, if we had a, I don't know, another Lambda variant or something that came along that just, and I don't think that's what's going to happen, but if something like that came along and just really surprised somebody, or if something happened in the Middle East that we're not anticipating, I think everybody's already watching the Middle East pretty carefully right now, but it would have to be a huge event, I think, that would shake the entire market to see everything fall out. And then, again, there's always going to be names that do well in this environment, for example, some of the fixed income. That's kind of poised to do well.
Yep.
If you're concerned about rates going higher, we've talked a lot about, you know, floating rate note funds, floating rate note ETFs, like FLRN or VKLN, you know, being in some names that will benefit because their duration is 0.2 and they're going to benefit as rates go higher. Even a money market fund, it would be nice to finally at some point have a little bit of cash in your cash account. So if we go in that direction, it wouldn't be the worst thing. It's just how quickly it happens. And as you know from the late, well, it's really the late 80s first, and then the late 90s, and then 08, when it happens quickly. And it's very tough at that point to be ahead of the game. So I think gradually, you know, selling a little bit into this environment, some of the oversold names or the overvalued names, and looking for some of these names, like I mentioned, like Nasdaq is a good way on the equity side. And on the fixed side, as some of these firms start issuing debt for refinancing to kind of get in there before rates go up, take advantage of this opportunity because these issues are going to be, you know, they're going to do well. They're going to be oversold. You know, when you ask the question, if you ask the question, how far do you go up the curve, I still say kind of stay within 5 years. But if you're getting 5 3/8 for an 8 or 9 year bond, that's a pretty solid.
You can survive that
company.
You can survive it. Yeah, you can survive that easy.
Yeah.
I mean, somewhere along the line, if it goes to 7 somewhere, the difference between 5 3/8 and 7 is not life changing. You're okay.
Right.
What do you make of you ask about what would be the and you're trying to as we all do, we try and anticipate, you know, what it is that could cause some kind of a fiasco. And yet, it seems to me, Dan, every single time in my life in the business, it's been some leverage event.
Yes.
Be it long-term capital, be it Argentinian debt. I haven't heard boo recently. I'm just lobbing stuff out there that I'm not trying to I don't want to frighten anybody, but I don't want anybody not to be aware either. I mean, somehow, someplace, Dan, and I don't know, Alan probably know better than me, if he wants to comment, feel free, Alan. Somehow, someplace, people are finding a way to borrow for this crypto crap. I'll use that term. I mean, there's no way this stuff is worth $2 trillion or somebody. I know somebody who just mortgaged their house and bought crypto. I mean, somehow, some way, if it's not in the U.S., it's someplace, that is moving at a rate that it's got to be borrowed money. I don't know what happened to the, you and I talked when you first came on the show, and we haven't talked about it in ages. What about the dollar denominated Chinese debt? I mean, that's the same as the leverage stuff in mortgages. We have no idea where it is and who's got it. I mean, there's all kinds of places around here. If it happens, it's going to come from a spot. I'm going to say, I'll bet you a dollar, Mortimer, that it will not be a public event like COVID. It will not be Middle East. It'll be some leverage fiasco like it has been every time it's happened in my lifetime that neither one of us thought about.
Yeah, and when it comes to crypto, I think that's a lot of newer money coming into the system. I've heard the same stories with younger people who put all their money there. you know, mostly people in the millennial age group who've done well in their careers but aren't really thinking about diversification at this point, just thinking, you know, that they really believe in it and they think that's the way to go. So to the extent that they can take on that volatility, that's fine. I don't have as much faith in that, and I think there's still enough older guys like me around that are really on the sidelines with it, or if you are going to participate, it's going to be in a very small way. So, you know, the one thing that hasn't happened, and I can say this from a bondholder's, you know, a bond manager's point of view, is we haven't had these, quote, creative securities come to market. You know, way back when Merrill Lynch did the Lions and the Tigers, and those were convertible bonds that had, you know, that had a kicker, but there was, you know, there was certainly some risk to them, and they were hurt. You know, they were impacted by some of the events. You know, and then obviously the subprime loans that became mortgages that were sold off, those were ways, again, of adding yield or getting access to, you know, higher returns. I don't see as much of that activity happening in the fixed market right now. I think it's the market's being driven more by investors, and the leverage, I agree with you, leverage is generally going to be the way that this happens. I don't see that, you know, at least from where I'm looking, I don't see that coming from more established investors or, let's say, more seasoned investors. I do see it coming from younger people who have the time frame to take it, but I don't see it coming as much from people who are approaching retirement. I think the thing about our generation is I think a lot of people have made a decent amount of money. We've had this nice run in the last decade, and as people are thinking about retiring or coming into that place, they want to hold on to what they've made. So for those people, if anything, this is the time to not necessarily go to cash, but to maybe start moving out of some of the high flyers and moving into names that are going to be a little more stable during retirement. And I think investors, although there's still plenty of investors in our age group who you know, still want the gusto, I think there are most of the investors in our age group would be convinced that as you're approaching retirement, this is the time to settle back. You don't have to make up for what you've lost because you haven't lost.
Dan, from your lips to God's ear, buddy, because I think those are the people that you deal with, and certainly the people that we shove your way now and in the future. Just let me help you. There's an awful lot of other people out there that are 80 years old, and if they have 40 cents, it's not in the latest dot-com company, they're calling up and complaining. I mean, there's a whole other universe out there that if somebody made a dime and they didn't make it, they're pissed.
Yeah, but I think that's going to change, and I think part of that is because we've grown so accustomed over the last 13 years, of making money and it not being that hard. And, you know, in some ways, having a correction is good for us as money managers because we're able to, we're already looking, you know, we have always looked at just finding the winners and the best names in the group. That's our style. But the shift to stock selection is important. The shift to even more importantly, sector selection, I think is really important. And people will realize at some point, hopefully, that, you know, your friend might have made money in that, but your friend also lost money on something else.
Oh yeah, so, I agree. Well, that's why, as you know, I would love to see more and more people, especially the older ones, either protected or with some of the stuff you do. But boy, I think that you're right. It's not. Well, let me ask you this question, and you're very truthful. How much in 2007? And you would be very much closer to this. How big of a danger did you think the mortgage debt was? I read some stuff that said there's $35 of leverage on every mortgage and every dollar of mortgage. And I read stuff and I anecdotally was somewhat aware of it, Dan, but I couldn't quantify it. It wasn't my business. I mean, when I say it wasn't my business, it's my business because I'm supposed to know all that stuff. But I had no idea how that could even happen, that Goldman Sachs could have, you know, synthetic portfolios that didn't have enough mortgages to put in them. And I had honestly no idea that it was that big. Did you?
Well, I did because there had been other CDOs and other type of you know, Wall Street created structured products that were, that blew up, if you will, in the past. So I was aware when it came specifically to subprime loans. My way of we weren't really big into the mortgages. We did CMOs, but we weren't really big into the subprimes. And my way of noticing it was looking at myself, who, you know, at the time was looking for property and seeing long, long lines of people who I was really surprised to be in those lines, you know, qualifying for, you know, million-dollar homes or getting into million-dollar homes. And kind of hearing the same thing from a lot of other people as well is that, you know, pretty much anybody can do these no-income verification loans. And that was more concerning to me sort of at the Main Street level, if you will, rather than at the Wall Street level. But knowing that there have been securities structured products that were created that were going to allow this to happen, it was definitely in my mind. I didn't think that we'd have such a severe blow-up, but it was definitely there. And a lot of that has to do, I think, also with the tightening and loosening of credit as part of the credit cycle, which I've talked about in the past. The credit cycle doesn't necessarily run in tandem with the business cycle or the stock market cycle. It kind of runs in its own, it does its own thing. And we're long in the tooth right now in the credit cycle.
Well, we're
just waiting for not a major change, but at least a shift.
Well, Dan, how do you...
You know, away from this easing, this, you know, into something that's going to be bit more tightened.
So, I would hope you're right.
I think having that cycle in the back of your mind is good, and paying attention to. And I think there are a lot of people that are paying attention to, you know, what product out there, what could potentially blow up.
Well, because since we're speculating here, what bad could happen? I don't know how we got on this topic, but I had some people on last week that were in the real estate. Who's coming on after you, John Flanagan, who's an attorney that does, you know, title stuff. And it appears we talked about, you know, some stocks that you and I think are worth 40 that are trading, you know, 240 or 340 or something. Well, if they're trading 340, you can borrow 170 on them, right? So there's leverage there that probably is, so you can borrow four times as much as you and I would pay for the damn thing. Is that a fair, right? But it also is happening across the board. I have a couple of guys on the show that have moved into these like low tax states. I'm not saying that's why they moved. Lady I had dinner with, my girlfriend, and she went to this artist exhibit. Who's the guy without the ear? What the hell's his name?
Van Gogh.
Van Gogh. There's a Van Gogh exhibit here. Without paintings, but somebody has done like a light show, they said it's absolutely spectacular, where the entire room is the painting.
Oh.
But anyway, they went to that, and we went afterward, and she was, one lady, her relative is building a house in Tennessee. They just called him, and it was like $1 million house, people have dough. They just called and said, if you want the house, it's now $1.5 million.
Oh, yeah.
So what I'm saying is, if you want to go buy a house, say, and you'll say, I'll pay $300. Now, It may appraise for 260, but if you pony up the other 40, you obviously can buy the place. Because, you know, you can be cash talks, right? But now, that's become one of the appraisal houses. So now they're all worth 300. So we're talking now in some of these areas that the mortgage is 150 to 200% more than what it would have been 2 years ago. So the leverage all over the place, I think, Dan, is going up dramatically. If you just look at the stock market and the home market, the amount of leverage has to have gone up dramatically in the last 8 to 12 months. I mean, I wonder, could we have a problem just in regular stuff that isn't, you know, isn't Argentina or Russia?
I think we can, and I think that's a good example. You know, my next door neighbor put their house on the market for double what I paid for mine, you know, a year ago. So it's, I've seen that trend, and it's that trend plus the other trend that goes along with that is people taking equity out of their homes and continuously refinancing. You're getting the better rate, you're pulling more cash out, and then, you know, just a slight, you know, sell off in the market. You know, I don't know if 10% is slight, but say we had a 10% sell off sometime in the next couple of years, that's going to greatly impact those people who have leveraged their homes, if you will, with, you know, taking out additional home equity. So they're going to be upside down, even though they weren't initially. So whether something that happened like that you're describing, or somebody taking out additional home equity loans, yeah, that's going to absolutely create a problem.
All right, so Dan, your
place right here in the U.S. And you are right. The other thing that's happening is that the acceleration in prices. is really where things go. You know, not only in, you know, chicken or food items, but you know, home items. You know, the stocks. You know, so asset bloat, asset inflation is
Dan, if your house
there, and I do think a certain part of it will come back, but I do think a certain good part of it is also going
to
continue.
If your cost to get in your house goes up $1 million, that's a lot of chicken. No.
Yeah.
Now, my advice, I won't say my advice to you, but probably somebody's would be, okay, your house cost $1 million. This guy's going to sell for $2 million. Now, even a dummy like me can say, a bank's going to give you, based on the new valuation, will easily loan you $500,000 on a house. Now, if you take that $500,000 and drop it in Bitcoin, you're rich.
And for how long?
just give it a couple of years. I'd sell it. Isn't that the formula?
Well, that would be a good hedge, if you would. You know, that would be a good hedge. That would be a smart hedge, I think, to put it into the market, whether it be Bitcoin or some other parts of the market. I would agree with that. But
somehow I get the feeling that Dan and wife are not going to take an equity loan and put it in Bitcoin. I have that feeling.
I'm definitely not. That's not something I'm going to do, that's for sure.
Dan, take care of yourself. As usual, good. I'm glad you and Alan got to talk like two words. Alan's not, he's much more chatty. They put a microphone in somebody's face, all of a sudden they don't talk. How does that work? Just saying. Anyway, Alan, thank you. Alan, thank you for your contributions. S&P futures down 1, NASDAQ futures down 19. Come back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Right now. Hello, Hope Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. We'll have Mr. Jan Flanagan in a second. We have Mr. Dave Scatina. Actually, David, for being 2 weeks off, you're doing pretty good over there so far.
Not bad for an old guy. Huh?
Are the toes involved as well as the hands over there?
What yeah, using the foot, everything.
Plus, you got Alan on the mic here.
Alan's out of control today.
Oh, he's out of control.
Same day over here.
Now, the minute he's not on the mic, he'll talk you ear rock. But now, since he's out. Anyway, S&P futures down at 1. We got nothing going on in the market here this morning. NASDAQ futures down 19. We got Dow futures up 45. The reason for that is Salesforce and earnings. They're up 7. You know, and I'm thinking the multiplier's 7.5. Is that about what it is now? 7.5. So that's seven bucks in the Salesforce is probably 50 in the Dow. So they're like the entire up in the Dow. It's not 1-to-1. It used to be 8.5 before they put all these high priced stocks in there. And I think it might be down to 7. Hey, well, I should check that, but that's about where it is. DAX down 77.5%, FTSE down 16.2, CAC around down 16.2. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei pretty much unchanged, up 17. However, Shanghai down 38, that's 1.1%, and we've got the Hang Seng down 278, 1.1%. They were coming back from that. They were down 20%, and they made a pretty good bounce, but now they're kind of heading the other way. We'll see if they sneak back into bear market territory. As of now, I'd say they probably won't, but then again, we'll see. Yesterday, Dow was up 39, S&P up 10, NASDAQ up 22. Bonds have had an interesting move. They're back to 1.35 on the 10-year. It was down as, I think it got below 1.2 for a day, or two. The blend of minus 0.40, and that was back, lower. It was minus 0.50. Japan stays right where it is, positive 0.01, but somehow they stay positive, but by a little bit. Oil down 75 cents, 67.61. Brent down 69, 71.56. Natural gas up 5 cents, 3.94, making a run at $4 again. RBOB is down 2 cents at 227. We've got gold down a buck, 17.90. Silver down 6 cents, 23.71, as these guys made a big move up the other day, and now they can't seem to hang in there on that stuff because the dollar is sneaking up a little bit. Copper down 1 cent to 425, and we've got crypto. Bitcoin is down $1,600 to 47,214, and we just had the PCE for the second quarter came out at a positive 6.5%, which is the inflation number the Fed allegedly likes to look at. I'm going to say if those guys are admitting to 6.5%, you can count on it being a lot more than that. David, is that conspiratorial enough or what?
Oh, definitely. I love it.
But it's only 6.5%, so when you go in and buy something and have it, like, double, you just tell them. It's only 6.5%.
Right.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Go ahead, man. Traffic, weather, sports, start.
7:37 in Chicago. Today's weather currently is 74 and sunny. We'll hit a high of 84 in the city. Possible thunderstorms due to humidity. And for our Phoenix listeners, it's 85 and clear to start out today. They're going to hit 112. It'll be a sunny day. Traffic, we have heavy buildup on the Eisenhower and Kennedy due to long-term construction and on 55 due to the Ryan exit ramp. There's one accident report on the left shoulder, Tri-State I-294 north at 111th. In sports, the Cubs with a day off today, split a doubleheader yesterday, beating the Rockies 5-2 in the first game, and in the second game, lose 13-10 in 10 innings. The Sox have a day game today. They dropped one last night to the Blue Jays 3-1, and the Diamondbacks beat the Pirates 5-2. In PGA FedEx Cup playoffs, top 70 players head to Maryland today to play in the BMW Championship. Back to you, Tom.
Mr. Flanagan with us?
He is.
I am indeed, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Hey, give me a second here. This GDP, the second quarter GDP, I think this is the second estimate, right, Alan?
It's not
the
only.
All right, so it's got at 6.6%. Right, so it's on an annual basis, right? And so your PCE, the price deflator, is 6.5%. All right, so what does that mean, Mr. Flanagan? You know,
you got to help me there, Tom.
All right, what it means is that the actual economy, the gross value, was up roughly 13%, 6.5% of which they claim is inflation. So the actual amount of widgets is only up 6.6%, right? So you got to subtract, you got to add the two together to get where the actual nominal growth is, and then they say, okay, out of the 13.3% growth, 6.5% of it's inflation, which brings you down to 6.6. However, if you're a conspiracy theorist and says, boy, it sure looks to me like the inflation's more like 10 or 12. I don't know if I go with the 12, but I would lobby for 10. It says that the real growth isn't quite there. Think of Home Depot. If you walk in and they sold, and the price of plywood goes from 40 to 50, and you only go from 400,000 pieces of plywood a year to 500 to 450, okay, your tremendous, your growth cash wise is going to be dramatic. It's going to be the 12% inflation plus you actually sold some more plywood, so that's going to be like in the 25% range, but it's really not.
Right.
So, or it could be worse. You actually sold less plywood, but your gross number of money spent on plywood goes up. But in fact, the amount of plywood you sold went down. So you got to be real careful on the interplay of these numbers. And our alleged business news shows never explain that. Now, either they assume you know, or they think you don't know, and are very comfortable with the fact that you don't know. What do you think it is, John?
I think it's very they're comfortable hoping you don't know and don't ask questions about it either.
Yeah, it's how did we get there? I mean when our news shows really are more about rating. I mean, when you and I were utes, did he say ute? When you and I were utes, I think there was, you know, people cared whether Walter Cronkite, CBS cared if you watch Walter Cronkite. It was on was on Channel 7 or 5? Was it
Howard K. Smith?
Howard K. Smith. And who was the other one? Dan Rather.
Holly Berkeley on NBC.
So, they cared whether you watched for that half hour that they gave up a network programming, essentially, for news. They would rather have you watch Walter Cronkite. But it wasn't they were going to tell you the news you actually wanted to hear versus the other guy to get you to watch him. Right? It was actually news. Right. And anybody who thinks that a show that's on 10 hours a day or 12 has anything to do with news and not ratings. I mean, what are you smoking? Just saying. The crinkly cigarettes? You wouldn't know anything about those, John. Just saying.
The news factor has just dropped off the radar. You know.
Yeah.
Or you have to redefine news as everything people think news really doesn't consist of.
Well, I will say this, that if the idea that there's a... I'm not a big, marijuana kind of guy, never was, but... To watch the Cubs right now, I might have to get into it. To take a bunch of gummies and go to the game and just kind of chill. Instead of buying $12 beers, I just have a few gummies and just kind of zone, sit there. Like, I might have to get into it, John. Just, it's the only way you can watch them.
Well, but when teams used to be in slumps like that, the fans just stayed away. But, if they have mood enhancers, they don't care if the team wins or loses. That's kind of the impression I have of baseball crowds generally. That's incidental anymore. So if you can go and hang out and have a couple beers and be with your friends and it's a beautiful night, the outcome of the game is, kind of a footnote.
Well, now, the night before, you go up there and you get poured on, right? So they call the game before it even starts. So some of those guys come piling into the Tripoli soaking wet. But now the ticket is only good for the next day at 5:30. So now the fact that could you get your business crowd back or even yourself back the next day? Maybe, maybe not. So you get there at 5:30. It like rains again, I think. I'm not sure if they had a delay, but it rains again. And even in this day and age, when you said David gave the announcement in 10 innings, that doesn't sell a whole story. So David's part of the fake news kind of thing. Because it was a doubleheader, you forgot to mention that the game is only 7 innings.
It's so, just assumed, Tom.
It's assumed, all right. I'm going to say most people forget that part. So it actually was 3 extra innings with the person starting at second base. How the hell does it take you 3 innings to get to score somebody with somebody starting at second base every inning? So then they finally lose. So you couldn't even lose in 7 like a man. You had to stretch people to 10 when they won't even sell beers anymore, make people even more miserable, and then lose in the 10th. Could you make it any worse? Why not put a tack on everybody's seat, for God's sake? I mean,
what kind of diehard fans are you relying on?
Oh, yeah, you can't even get a beer. At least let me drown my sorrows, for God's sake. I mean, how much pain do you have to take to be a fan these days?
You might need some of those gummies.
As much as they can dish out, though.
I mean, it's like no good deed goes unpunished. No, I mean, first you got to get searched to walk in. I mean, I guess they let you bring in a bottle of water. That's about it. I mean, if a girl has a purse, they got to go through her purse. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, how much do you really have to want it to go to one of these games?
Well, they make it pretty painful, I think, and yeah, the prices to it too.
Oh, God!
You know, it's not the enjoyable event it used to be for me, anyway.
Well, you got the worst team in baseball, probably. Although the Orioles and actually the Diamondbacks are doing a little better, but you got the Orioles. And with what the highest ticket prices are pretty darn close. That's a match to start with. Anyway, so John, what your governor not wanting to be behind the eight ball is going to come out today and demand 2-year-olds wear masks. Do we even give people time on TV to say something like that?
No, and that's the really infuriating part of this, Tom. That there's no discussion. You know, these executive orders that are handed out by unelected people to the elected officials who swallow it whole and never ask for input, never tolerate, you know, any kind of conflicting opinions about it or contrasting narratives. Why 2 years old? You know, why not after 6 months, Tom? You know, I think six month old kids have their mouths open a lot of time. Their time. Why don't they put masks on them too? I mean, these are the kind of idiotic things that you could say should be done. If you believe the 2-year-olds being masked makes a difference, but there's no way to get any kind of opposing viewpoints about any of this, which is the way it's been now throughout this whole thing. And you got public officials who are really, you know, just trying to test the waters and see what they can get away with. And there is no pushback. There's no pushback from legislators. There's no pushback in the media. There's no pushback in public interest groups or in the medical field either, which is kind of disgusting to me.
Well, I was trying to talk to Lou, although we got on other subjects which were good. This whole idea of businesses forcing people to be vaccinated, and then our president basically giving the power to CEOs to tell people all about their private lives, which I don't know where the hell that comes from, but why stop there? I mean, if Delta Airlines is going to fine you $200 a month towards your, I mean, I'm just, this is my mentality, as you know, Jan, if something happens, I immediately say, okay, if this gets out of hand, where's it going to go? I'm going to say that, if I would have Lori Lightfoot on the show, I'd tell her right now, here's what I'm going to do to you, Lori. I'm going to put a chip right between your shoulder blades like you're a friggin' dog, right? Which is what they do to dogs, by the way. So you can find them if they go. I'm going to put a chip right between your shoulders. And by the way, it's going to tell me if you went out and drank a 48-ounce Coke, because now that's a fine of $10 times your insurance. And oh, by the way, it looks to me like you could lose a few pounds, like me. And now that's $200 a month until you shave 40. Or Pritzker 100 or whatever it is, or me, whatever. It's not like I'm poking fun at people, because then we all have an issue. How far are we going to go with this? I mean, $200 because you don't have a vaccine, because even though we are acknowledging the fact that the vaccine is not going to stop you from getting or transferring the Delta variant, I think you should get a vaccine to protect yourself, because it appears the people who get it, who have had the vaccine, get a much lighter thing. So I would recommend that. But I would say it that way. I wouldn't try and oversell it. And now the idea that you might be in the hospital, and oh, by the way, the company would have to pay more on the insurance. Now, where does that stop? Okay, we're talking about fat people. If you got diabetes, God help you if you put a piece of Fannie Mae in your mouth, because that's a $200 fine. And this chip's going to tell all. Lori, and we want you to be the first person that has one. What do you think she says to that?
She'd go, do the line she gave to Donald Trump. Yeah. Blank, blank, blank.
Yeah. Yeah.
You.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, these people think they can go out on a limb because it's them. And Lou claims that they've already had an OSHA directive that says that this kind of ruling by your CEO, that it's you can't complain to OSHA. What are you doing? They can't tell me to do this. I mean,
right. I mean, this, the thing that just shoots complete holes through all this for me, Tom, is the fact that the White House staff does not have to be vaccinated. The employees of Pfizer, that makes one of the vaccines, are not required to be vaccinated. And in the case of the White House in particular, if you think here's a, you know, a body of people around sensitive, important, unique officials, such that if they get sick, any one of them gets sick, it has potential national security issues if people can't do their jobs. And if it isn't important enough for them to be vaccinated, then how can they say that the rank and file, you know, just trying to earn a living, doing their job, going to school, have to be vaccinated? I think that gives lie to the whole thing. Otherwise, Pfizer would say, look, it's like, you know, if you work for an advertising agency and you push cigarettes, you should be smoking at your desks every day because this is our product, this is our lifeblood. Pfizer doesn't want their employees taking it. They don't require them to take it anyway. So that tells me there's not a whole lot of confidence in this product because the people closest to the nerve centers aren't being required to get it. That tells me almost everything I need to know.
Well, I honestly believe from all the stuff I've read, and I read, you know, buku in this in the last 18 months, a lot of it has been sent by the listeners, and I thank you for that. And I don't read all of them, but I try and read as many as I can. If I hadn't already had it, by the way, I have one shot and I've got to go back at my other one. I'm doing the vaccine thing because it's been a while. But the more I read, the more I think I'm really not doing myself any kind of favor by getting the vaccine after already having the disease. I mean, I really don't think I need it, and I really don't. I mean, there's a slight chance it might hurt me, although I'm not that worried about that, so I'm going to get my second one. But I will say this, Janet, I will never show my vaccine card to anybody. If you don't let me in with it, I'm leaving. I will never show it to anybody. And if it means I can't fly, I'll drive. You know, I think it's an absolute, what's the difference? I think the people who have already had it should be able to just say, I already had it. And, I mean, what do you think tomorrow, you know, there's some old people at work for PTI. When I say old, not that old, what would you say tomorrow? I'll ask Alan, he's sitting here. What would you say tomorrow to, Chief, I don't believe you ever had the friggin' measles or the chicken pox or the mumps. You get your ass in there and we get the pin in your ass. Wait a minute, I had it. I don't need to do that. We're not believing you. Screw you. By the way, we make the measles vaccine. Okay. I guess I should believe you. Why? By the way, how much is that shot? Well, this is a $100-$500 shot. But we're not going to believe you anymore. Show me a record that when you were 8 years old, you had the measles, that your mom put in the Bible or something, you know, in a family heirloom Bible. You know, Tom had measles in 1960. You know, why believe anybody? When you go down, I can't believe that you had the COVID. I'm not going to believe you. Go get a vaccine. Why is it any different? I don't believe, John, I don't believe you had the measles. Get your ass in there. Drop your pants.
And worse, you know, what is your word worth about your own health?
Right.
And why are you being asked sensitive questions about your health anyway?
Yeah. But I agree with Lou, when he, I don't know if you mentioned, Lou listened earlier. I mean, the COVID has identified things that if you actually gave a crap about people, you would already know. And one of which, that African Americans are more susceptible, it appears to be. I'm not saying it's an idea, I'm not going down. I'm saying for whatever reason, there's a higher percentage of diabetes in the African American community. So it doesn't surprise me that if COVID goes after people that have diabetes harsher, that there's more deaths in the African American community. Now, where exactly do we see now we're going to figure out a way to have earlier diabetes testing, earlier this and that and the other, because diabetes is now something that can be very well controlled in most people. We're going to make sure that 5 years from now that the people in the African-American community don't have a disproportionate amount, or at least they're not dying from it. I don't think you can cure it. But I don't see anything like that, do you?
Not at all.
Well, therein lies the problem. The people that are dying from COVID are dying from COVID because they have, I mean, in a lot of cases, because they have this big diabetes issue. Well, how do we know the next flu is not going to do the same? Well, let's figure out a way to deal with the diabetes issue.
I think the only problem is, Tom, is one is affecting old people, and one is sort of like the measles, right? My generation, we've all had this show that our vaccines for getting into elementary school, getting the measles vaccine, right, kind of affecting the younger crowd, and unfortunately, U.S. government kind of likes the old people a little bit better than the young people, I think.
Well, when I was young, Jan, do you remember the polio shots were given at the school?
At the school, yeah.
I mean, I want to make sure, but I'll tell you what, Alan, as much as, well, measles was a pain in the butt for 5 days, Chicken pox is worse because they itched more than the measles, I think.
Those oatmeal baths.
Oh, no. God. Yeah, they were. Well, no, you had, what was the stuff? They still sell calamine lotion, Jen?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the only.
If people were scarred, you know, and everything else.
Well, yeah, if you didn't. If you were. I was of an age where if your mom told you not to scratch, you didn't. But I can remember if you were like 3 years old, Alan, they actually would like almost put the kid in handcuffs. Because if you scratched a chicken pox zit, for lack of a better term, you got a scar. But calamine lotion, God, we had that by the gallon. Remember that? What do you use it for today?
Bug bites.
Oh, you use it for bug bites.
Yeah,
works for bug bites.
Have it around town.
Oh, yeah. So you know what? Mosquitoes love me. I should go grab some. But
yeah, come visit me. You'll definitely use some calamine lotion.
Well, you're down in Carolina. You moved to where the mosquitoes are. But whose fault is that? I don't like mosquitoes. Why didn't you move to the swamp in Louisiana, for God's sake? By the way, speaking of weird stuff that I talk about, one of the guys at the Tripoli, our actor buddy, Scott, loves to watch that Naked and Afraid. And, so one of the, have you ever watched that stupid show?
I haven't watched it though, no.
Okay, well, they take two people, a guy and a girl, and they never met each other.
Not necessarily. Now they have couples. Okay. Love couples.
Oh, God.
Now.
What are they, like, trying to break them apart?
I guess.
anyway, you show up and the first thing you do is take your clothes off and you get to pick like three items, either like a little pot or I guess they give everybody a knife, right? But now you get something, and you get like three things, and not enough to keep you where you're going. I mean, there's nothing against the bugs or anything, and you have to make it. Was it a month, Alan?
21 days or something?
Something like some bizarre thing. Well, they put everybody in. There's always bugs. There's always this. Well, if the bugs are big enough, that's a good thing because they eat the bugs. You know, but they put this couple in Louisiana in the swamp, and the mosquitoes are like all over the place. They had the lady checked out after like 2 days. You can check out. She checks out after 2 days. She had something like 200 mosquito bites on one half of her butt. And she ended up with not Lyme. What's the other one you get from the mosquitoes? Not Lyme disease.
West Nile?
Yeah, she ended up with West Nile. And she was there for like 48 hours. She was absolutely, I'm like, totally bit up from top to bottom, literally. I'm like, forget. Anyway. But why didn't you move to the swamp, you know?
I do. I basically live in the swamp. Go crab trapping, you know. Get my fresh seafood out of the body of water right there in the marsh.
I'm going to speak for my friend Jan. If we never went crab trapping, we will never miss it. Is that fair?
I'd go with you, Alan, in a second.
David, go ahead.
Yeah, we can get all the crab dip, and we'll send these guys to the grocery store.
Oh, God. So, Jan, what do you think if are we going to end up with a big fight over in Kabul? I think we are. I hope we are.
We're going to be right back in there, Tom, and it's going to be, you know, a harder fought time the second time around because we've sort of breached what the Taliban was pushing and what agreement they were holding us to. They'll be in a stronger position than they were 20 years ago, and part of that is our own fault. But, you know, the thing about it, Tom, some people, I can't name names, but made a lot of money by our being there in the last 20 years or so.
Wouldn't you like to see a list of the top 20 people that got money for meals for soldiers and laundry for soldiers and fixing the jeeps and all the other stuff? I bet.
Well, you know, when Pete Buttigieg was running for president, Vogue magazine did a piece about him, like, you know, just a typical sit-down interview. And they're describing, you know, sitting in his home in South Bend and what kind of artwork is on the wall. The most visible artwork in the entire house was this enormous product map of Afghanistan. You know, here's where the lithium is, here's where the copper is, blah, blah, blah. And I would say that doesn't say much about Buttigieg's art taste, but it says a lot about his financial interest.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I'm thinking that Halliburton's on that list.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I bet there's a lot of names there. Neither one of us would even recommend. I've never recommended, even recognized.
And the, you know, those sorts of people will continue to make money, even with the Taliban in it, because they have no difficulty dealing with the Taliban.
Here's a way to end the show. If you seriously went after that, would you have to stay away from open limousines like Kennedy?
Oh yeah,
I think so.
Oh yeah.
I'm more like I'm not K anymore in The Godfather. No, you're being naive, K. Just saying. Anyway, John, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you next week. Alan, thank you. You actually said something in the last half hour. It was good. You know, S&P Futures down 5, NASDAQ Futures down 38. Alan, I'm going to have you a regular star soon. We'll be back tomorrow with Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.